This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Happy Thursday, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Alice Jovich from Arlington, Texas. And you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 18th, episode 1193, brought to you by Riding Warehouse. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on Horses in the Morning. Yes, it's only Thursday, but tomorrow's Friday, so you're almost there. You're almost there. Last day of work, out to riding for a lot of people across the country. Not so much for us here in Florida. It's supposed to be under 100 degrees, so we'll probably be looking at our horses out the window while they're sweating.
Well, we won't be doing a lot of riding here either because we had Tropical Storm Bill come through yesterday and canceled all our weekend plans. We were finally starting to dry out.
I know. I saw that it was coming across the Gulf, and instead of heading for us, it was heading for you. And I thought, oh my God, they just got done having massive, major, record flooding, and now they're going to get another 14 inches of rain. Was it bad this time? Or
it wasn't as bad here as they had feared it would be. The weather models on a Tuesday night, they were saying, depending on where it settled, we could have had 6 to 12 more inches of rain. And I think we ended up just having like 3 or 4, but still 3 or 4 inches on top of the other, you know,
25
bazillion inches yeah. We had before. And then we were supposed to be going to Sand Springs, Oklahoma for a competition this weekend that had already been rescheduled from Memorial Day when we had the last bit of rain. They're getting it today and they're supposed to have 5+ inches. So needless to say, this competition had happened like 37 straight years had never not happened. And so we've broken a historical streak, which is very sad.
Well, I got to tell you, you guys are getting the storms this year. You know, it's usually Florida. It's usually us that's in the direct line of all the storms. But boy, it's been Texas's turn this year. And the weird part is that it's just after so many years of drought.
Well, it's the El Nino shift. You know, it went from La Nina to El Nino, and my hay guys tells me all about it every year, about what the El Nino and the La Nina are doing and what it means for next year's hay crop. So
I don't know what it is about hay guys, but they seem to know everything.
The
ones we had were that way too. They just knew everything about everything, and you couldn't tell them anything.
Oh, well, he really does know everything about everything. I mean, he's always right, so I have no reason to doubt
it. Is the Farmer's Almanac, do they still put that out?
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
Wow, Farmer's Almanac. I don't know when the last time I saw a Farmer's Almanac was.
I think it's online now.
We need to get, Jennifer, write this down. We need to get somebody from the Farmer's Almanac on the show.
I should have my hay guy.
Write that down, because we definitely need to get the editor or somebody from Farmer's Almanac, because, oh my God, the fact that, one, it's still around, and we could talk, that'd be an interesting conversation. Write that down. We got to get that done.
Yes, write that down.
All right. We got to get them on. Hey, Alice is here the third Thursday of every month, of course, with the North American Trail Ride Conference. And we talk about trail riding and all things that way. And Jennifer's going to tell us a little bit about what's coming up on today's show.
On today's NATRC episode brought to you this week by Riding Warehouse, we'll start out with some advice on choosing the best trails for hot weather riding. And then Susan Bowden-Miller stops by for a chat about riding with a pain in the back. And closing the gate on this Thursday adventure, Bree Rosario from Riding Warehouse talks about balancing career and horses. So stay tuned for the party, folks.
Well, and I have a list for you, too, Alice, that I found that I wanted to share with you, because I think it directly applies to all the competitors, whether you're trail riding or dressage or eventing. It doesn't matter. So we'll talk a little bit about that, too. But first, I have to let you know that it is National Splurge Day. It's also National Go Fishing Day. So take your pick. Well, maybe you're going to splurge by going fishing. Maybe that, you know, you can combine both days if you're a fisherman and splurge by going fishing today. But yeah, it's National Splurge Day. You're supposed to go out and do something nice for yourself today. And then National Go Fishing Day, well, that's kind of self-explanatory. So what'd you say?
Ice cream.
There you go.
Ice cream, yeah.
There you go.
I took my National Splurge Day yesterday.
So. Oh, did you?
Yeah, I got a new hairdo and, you know, a little color and. I never do that.
You went to the spa. You had a spa day.
I had a spa day.
Who decides on these national days anyway?
I don't know.
Who made
the Farmer's Almanac?
Yeah. Is there a group that's out there just saying, okay, we're going to decide what's going to be every day of the week? And when I was looking at the list this morning, I went, holy cow, some days have like 20 national things. It's, you know, it's like, oh, who decides all this stuff? Or do you just decide for yourself? We need to declare a National Horses in the Morning Day.
There you go.
Absolutely.
We'll just declare it. You know, everybody has to go out and ride their horse in the morning. Something.
No. They have to ride in the afternoon. Otherwise, they can't listen to the show.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Well,
so
we'll
then it would need
that.
To be Horses in the Morning Day needs to be like in the cooler season. Because
that's true.
Yeah.
So it'll be National Go Ride Your Horse in the Afternoon after listening to Horses in the Morning Day.
There you go.
Yes.
There's a great title.
And it's going to be in October.
Yeah, that's a...
Oh, October.
That one comes right off the tongue. That people will remember that one. That's funny. So let's see here. We have a couple of guests coming up today, one of which I've talked to before, and she's a great guest later on in the show. You'll like her. But first, I have this list here that I wanted to go over with you. It's from Horse Junkies United, and it was written by, I have no idea. Because it doesn't say. So, but it was from Horse Junkies United, and that's horsejunkiesunited.com. And it's called The 12 Rules of Good Sportsmanship. And you guys really do preach that, don't you?
Yes, we very much believe that sportsmanship is above winning, you know, or trying to win. We help the riders be good sportsmen. So like if you stop to help a rider, you're not penalized on your time or, you know, we always want people to help. And we have a pretty good reputation for being one of the friendlier horse sports because people will always stop to help each other.
Well, these are the 10 tips for being a great horse person, and it is at shows. This is directly related to shows. So the first one is congratulate the people in your class. I think sometimes we forget when you're done with your class, you're thinking about yourself and how you did, and you kind of forget about everybody else. You're in the zone. When somebody else might have had an amazing, it's a little harder when they're spread out like you are, but, you know, even being by the finish line after you're done with and watching the others come in, I think, don't we sometimes just forget that others are even riding?
Well, that's the nice thing about NATRC is because we have our awards at the either, like if it's a one-day ride at the end of the day or the two-day ride at the end of the whole ride, as many people as possible will stay. Some people have really long drives and have to leave, but, you know, most of the people will stay. And so we honestly feel like, you know, it's like obviously everybody likes to win, but we like our friends to win too. So, or, you know, we love it when new people come and they win. So we're always really happy whoever gets the ribbons. You know, we cheer, we clap. You know, there's no visible, that should have been me. You know, you know, seriously, I mean, it's really cool that it doesn't matter. Like sometimes I'll find myself wishing for somebody else to win. Like I'll be like, oh, I really hope so-and-so wins, you know, and I just really find myself rooting for my friends. So.
Well, the second one is say hello and thank you to the volunteers. And I'll tell you who is really good at that are the drivers, you know, in CDEs. You know, we've been volunteers, and a lot of the drivers, as they're coming out of the obstacles, will thank the volunteers in the middle of the competition. So, you got to give them credit for that. And, you know, without the volunteers, these shows wouldn't happen. And, you know, it's kind of a thankless job being a volunteer in many cases, depending on what you're doing.
Yes.
So, and some of the volunteer jobs are not glamorous. They're not fun, but they need done.
Yes, it's very important to thank them.
Yeah. Be patient in the show office. And boy, that's tough to do sometimes when you get to the show and it's not as organized as it could be, but you gotta kind of have to remember that everybody in the show office is probably a volunteer too.
That's true.
Yeah.
And the lines back up and people get to chatting and it's hard for the secretary to concentrate.
Yep. And, you know, it might not be the secretary's fault that it's messed up. You know, that they don't have your entry, and you know, it might be somebody else's fault, but you got to blame somebody, I guess. And there's been some interesting times in show offices. I'm trying to think, Jennifer, if we had any major ones that what you were showing that I could remember in the show office.
Not when we were showing, but I remember quite a few of them when I was the secretary. I was on the receiving end.
Another thankless job at horse shows, the secretary.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Send your show secretary flowers and maybe some tranquilizers.
Oh, can you imagine what it's like to be a show secretary? First of all, everybody gets their entries in late, and then they're always changing everything till the last minute. You got people calling, you're writing to you saying, I'm doing this or doing that, or I'm changing this or changing that, or my horse is lame and I got to bring another horse. Can I do that? It's just got to be a thankless job.
I've been a secretary a bunch of times, and I actually kind of like it. The chaos, I don't know, it gets my adrenaline flowing, I guess.
Well, I think you have to be that kind of person, or you wouldn't survive as a secretary, would you?
I guess, I don't know. I just, you know, it's I don't know, with our system, we're computerized, and so most everybody has all their stuff in the computer, and it's usually the same horse. And so we don't have that many people changing at the last minute, usually. So that's one of the nice things.
This is an interesting one. Smile. Just smile. Absolutely. You know, smile when you're at a show. And a lot of the sports psychologists will say that, too. And, you know, you do see the people with their rather stern faces, and they're nervous, and they're upset, and some are about ready to throw up. And it's hard to smile when you're about ready to throw up. But, you know, but you know what? If you do, it actually helps. It does. You don't see too many people
next
smiling and throwing up.
Next time you're feeling
nauseous,
Glenn, I want you to smile. Just try.
Yeah, maybe that's a good idea. Because I tell you that, I don't know if you've ever seen Mike Rowe in Dirty Jobs. There was some job that really smelled bad. And they told him if he felt like he was going to puke, that he should smile. And it would help him not puke.
Huh. Who knew?
I can't remember which one, but it was like it smelled really bad. And he kept thinking he was going to barf. And they're like, just smile. And he'd smile, and he had the most awful smile. But it kept him from throwing up.
I can't watch that show because it makes me want to puke. Tell someone to have a good ride. While it's okay to have a bad ride, refrain from complaining about it within earshot of other riders. And we've all heard that person, right? They get done, they've had a bad ride, and they're letting everybody that is in 12 trailer lengths of their trailer know that they had a horrible ride.
Yes.
And that negativity spreads, by the way. So it's, you know, I always try and distance myself from those people. First of all, nobody wants to hear it, right? And we all have bad rides at times. And especially if you haven't gone yet, you don't want to hear that person. That's the last person you want to hear from that day.
Oh, see, we were all riding at the same time. And we usually come back with enough war stories of all the naughty things our ponies did out on the trail that we're all sharing our moments of humiliation.
I think that's different than the whiner, though, don't you? I think that's kind of different than the constantly whiny person, you know, who's never happy.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Watch without judgment. It's not your job. And nobody else standing next to you wants to hear it. And, you know, if you've ever sat in the stands watching a dressage competition, this one applies. Yeah. Now, I don't, because I don't know anything about dressage, and they all look like they're doing wonderful to me. So
you comment on things like nice tail and,
yes,
wow, look at all those socks.
Yes,
and,
that's it.
Yeah, she looks lovely in those breeches.
And then I say to Jennifer, what's that move again? You know, so I can't comment on, especially on dressage. Jumping, I can a little bit more because it's a little easier. They did it or they didn't.
Yeah.
Or they looked good or they looked pretty bad. I mean, there's four things you look at in jumping. As far as whether they hit their spots or not, can't tell. So,
yeah. Well, if they knocked the rails over, that didn't go well. If
yes,
they
exactly.
Got over and the rails are up, it went great.
It's much easier with jumping.
Yeah.
Now, if you watch a Grand Prix dressage rider beside a novice dressage rider, you can tell a difference. but, you know, the little nuances of that, not so much. Thank the sponsors. You know, I'm always amazed, and there are some riders that are really good at this, or professional riders that are sponsored by a number of companies who are really good at thanking the sponsors. And then there's others that just totally forget the sponsors even exist. You know, we try and be good about it here on the show because we wouldn't have the show without the sponsors. But there's some professional riders out there that need to go to sponsor class.
That's one of the things that I always try to do.
Thank the sponsors of the horse show. When you go to the horse show and you see that giant banner from Company X, that company put a chunk of change into that show to help make it happen. So say thanks to them, too.
Well, and I always try to go home and write notes to the ride manager and the ride secretary. And if I know there were sponsors, like people who donated prizes or, you know, like you said, an actual sponsor, I always go home and write them notes because people just don't write notes anymore. And, you know, or if something really special happened at the ride, like I rode with somebody one time and we kind of did it mutually because her horse was a little laggy and my horse liked to have a friend, but we didn't really want to be together, but we kind of spaced ourselves out so that our horses used each other, but it was good for everybody. And I got the nicest note from her afterward about how a pleasant ride she had with me. And I thought that was just so sweet. And then I had the same thing for me another time. And I wrote her a note and she was like, oh my gosh, you wrote a note. You know, just people love getting notes.
You're making me feel inadequate, Alice. Quit that. Come on. Jeez.
Now I disagree with the next one. Strongly disagree with the next one. Offer a helping hand. That isn't the part I disagree with. This is the part I disagree with. When people are loading or unloading their trailer, do not offer a helping hand when somebody's loading the trailer. This is...
I think she means the stuff, not the horse, Glenn.
I'm talking the horse here. If somebody's having trouble loading their horse, do not offer to help. Do not walk in and help uninvited. You only help to load a trailer when you're invited. We've seen so many situations go from bad to worse when people try and help. You know, true. And maybe your horses that are going to the trail rides are a little better, but you go to some of the shows and these horses are, you know, for one reason or other, aren't terrific at loading. And you know what? The owner has it in hand. They'll ask you if they need help. That's one place not to step in.
I would tend to agree with you because... Yeah. I always feel so bad when I see somebody having trouble loading, but and sometimes if it's gone on a while, I might say, hey, if you want a hand, just give me a holler.
And that's the way to handle it. You know, that's the way to handle it is, you know, you can offer to help, but don't jump in. We've seen that situation before and it just gets ugly. Well, that's it. Those are the ones that are on this list of 12 rules for good sportsmanship. And that was from Horse Junkies United. Now, you had another list, too.
I did because, you know, theoretically, we should be coming into our summer riding months, though it may be another month or two in North Texas before. Oh, wait, summer will be over. Like all the trails that I ride normally, I've got a few places further south I can still go. But for the most part, you know, the places that we ride, like the grasslands, is closed. The roads are a mess. They're assessing the trails for damage. I mean, we can't, even the people who live on the grasslands aren't supposed to go into the grasslands and ride. That's how bad it is. So, but I have a list of important tips to remember for riding on the hot months. And the first one was to never go exploring on a hot day. You choose a familiar route instead so that you know exactly how long you'll be out. And, you know, I do this, especially like if you're going to be out alone, like I'll choose to go to a park where I have there's an entrance so they know I'm there, or I'll go to a ranch that has like everything's fenced in and the owners know I'm there so that there's no chance of me, like I wouldn't go to the grasslands by myself on a really hot day without someone to check in with, because, you know, what if I got overheated on the trail, you know, and I couldn't call or something, you know, it's too much space for someone to try to find me.
Made half the country jealous because they don't have all of those cool places to go riding.
We are really blessed where I live. I have so many different places normally that I can just get in the trailer and go. It says select a route that offers ample shade and access to water. You want to give your horse every opportunity to drink during a ride. Carry a collapsible water bucket and a sponge to douse your horse and keep him cool. Putting cool water on his neck, chest, and legs will enhance his own cooling system. Never put cold water on his hindquarters because it may cause cramping. This about the access to regular water and shade reminds me of a situation I got into last summer where I went to a park that was local, and it doesn't have very many miles of trail, but it was a really hot day and I was the only one out there. And I went down to the water to get some water for my horse, and discovered that the bank was clay and I couldn't climb back up again.
Oops.
So it was awful. It was kind of scary. And my horse stayed put. He didn't come down. And the dog was splashing out in the water. She thought it was great. And I finally took off my boots and climbed up the hill in my socks because my boots kept slipping on the clay. So along with make sure there's access to water, make sure it's safe access to water.
And all these rescue stories we hear, it's going to be you someday.
Oh my, well, and actually the rest of that story is that the horse finally did come down to the water because he was thirsty and he got a drink, but I couldn't climb up. And he actually ended up pulling us. I had taken my boots off at that point. He ended up pulling us up the hill. So, because I was on the ground, I could not get my feet. I mean, I could not, it was so slippery. It was pretty scary. And there was no one to call. There was like, who am I going to call?
Who knew, Alice, that where you live, even in spring and summertime, you need to have ice cleats packed in your saddlebags?
Exactly.
I would have got you up that hill.
Yeah, if I'd been wearing tennis shoes or like riding sneakers that day instead of cowboy boots. You know, who knew? It was one of those moments.
It's hard to fit those hiking boots in the stirrup, though, you know?
Like Ariat Terrains have a better
yeah,
sole than like my leather boots. Yeah. You know, they just slip. It's like, it didn't look bad walking down. It wasn't that big a deal. But every time I put my foot up the hill to climb back up, it just slide right back out. And it was like 102 degrees. I had plenty of water, but I was starting to panic a little bit. It's like, how am I getting out of this hole? So avoid steep or difficult trails that will require your horse to exert himself unnecessarily. I don't know that I've ever actually followed this advice. I'll pick a shady trail versus a sunny trail. And then it says save cantering and galloping for a cooler day. And that's good advice, because if it's that hot, you're already going to be against the, you know, fighting the whole, you know, heat versus humidity versus cooling. So you don't want to put your horse in a position where it can't cool itself off.
We ride and drive around the roads here in our equestrian neighborhood. So there's like 17 miles of roads, but we know in the morning which ones are the shadiest and in the evenings which ones are the shadiest, because boy, it does make a difference.
Makes a huge difference.
You're about 15 degrees cooler in the shade than you are in the sun.
Well, and a lot of times if we're riding someplace that is shady and sunny, we'll trot the sunny spot so we get back to the cool, and then we walk the cool spots. Well, you know, we walk in the shade and we trot in the sun.
Now, do you guys probably don't have the problems with spider webs that we do. Like in the summertime here, when we get like over the next 2 months, nobody will go riding in the woods here because the spider webs are just incredible.
Oh yeah, we do. We have that problem. They just send me first because I don't care. And sometimes
I'll
take
stick or what? You have a spider web stick?
Huh? I just I don't care. My horse, well, I don't help people who have tall horses though, because my horse is only like 14'2". So, you know, the people that are behind me on 16 hand horses, I haven't done much good for them. But I'll take my crop or my dressage whip if it's a particularly big whip and just kind of whip it out of the way. But it doesn't, I don't know, the spiders just don't get them. They don't bother me. Snakes, yes, spiders.
Jennifer carries a, do you still carry your fly thing, your fly whisk?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's what she uses. She uses, you know, the fly whisk, what they look like. Well, she uses that for the spider webs.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
So it says, and number five is kind of funny because I think by now their horses would be shut out. But it says, if your horse has a thick coat, consider giving him a full body clip. It's like, by the time we get to this point in the year, we don't have coats. So
I guess there are some breeds
that do. Icelandic horse.
Yeah, some breeds that have a thicker coat all the time.
Or a horse that has Cushing's, maybe.
Yeah.
And then number six is, if your horse shows signs of overheating, get him to a water source immediately. And remove the saddle, sponge, or douse your horse's neck and shoulders with cold water. Walk him slowly, preferably into the shade, and monitor his temperature and pulse and respiration. Continue to apply water until your horse's vital signs return to normal. And this could go for the human as well.
Right. Or the dog.
Or the dog. Yeah. The dog, yeah. I usually don't take my dog out if it's really hot. And it makes her mad because she always wants to go, unless I know there's going to be a lot of water on the trail, which won't be a problem this year. But if it's over 90 or 95 and I'm going to go out for several hours, I usually just leave the dog at the trailer in the air conditioning or under the trailer.
Well, speaking of dogs, and to change the subject here a little bit, speaking of dogs and pets, have you seen the preview for the movie The Secret Life of Pets yet?
No.
You have to go to our Facebook page. Everybody has to do this. Go to Horses in the Morning Facebook page and scroll down, and you're going to see the preview for a movie called The Secret Life of Pets, and it's made by the Despicable Me people.
Okay.
It is hilarious. I can't wait for this movie to come out. It's not going to come out till 2016, but it's what the pets do when you're away at work.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
And it is just, you watch this, and it is just funny as could be. I mean, it's just hilarious. And they have it nailed. They just have it nailed. The different cats and dogs and personalities and the whole thing. It's just funny. You have to watch the trailer, and then we're all going to go collectively. We're going to have National The Secret Life of Pets Movie Day. And all horse people are going to go on the same day. We're going to watch it because it's just hilarious. I don't know that they have any horses in there, but we all have dogs and cats, and it is very good. You have to check it out. it's worth watching.
That sounds great. Yeah, I have a new kitten, and he's sitting here chewing on my toes while we're doing this.
Why don't they stay kittens? If only they could stay kittens.
I know,
they're
right?
So darn cute.
Oh, he is. He's precious. His name is Chester.
It'd be so cool if they could do that. Well, our first guest is ready, if you want to introduce her.
All right. Our first guest this morning is Susan Bowden-Miller. She began riding with NATRC in, I think, around 2001. But she rides trails pretty much exclusively just for fun and enjoyment. And she grew up riding horses in Costa Rica. And she's still lucky enough to get to go back to Costa Rica every summer. Good morning, Susan. How are you this morning?
Good morning. Fine. Thank you. And how are you?
I'm great. It's so good to have you on this morning.
Thank you. Pleasure.
So, Susan, tell us a little bit about your early life getting to live in Costa Rica and ride. And, you know, it sounds, the stories you've told me about, you know, riding there just sound like so much fun. It sounds like you had some really carefree days on horseback as a child.
I did have carefree days. We rode mostly in coffee plantations and through sugar cane fields up into the forest in the mountains. It was a rainy area, so there was always lots of water crossings and mud. But it was very pretty, and it was mostly work roads that tractors could get through.
So are the... go on.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and you've also told me a little bit about, like, you had a mare that you rode a lot when you were growing up, and that the horses were a little bit different than the horses we have over here, like in size and stature.
Yeah, they're smaller. They're work horses. Of course, they have everything that has been influenced by outside breeds, but the primary one is their local Criollo breed, and it's used for work, and that's what I rode. My horse was kind of like a Pasofino, but not really. She was just a...
Were they gated?
Great horse. Not... Some of them were, yes, but not all of them.
Okay.
It was kind of hit or miss. It was not a consistent thing. They are a jumble of different breeds. But they're small because they mostly graze, and the grass isn't high nutrition enough to support the larger animal. So over the years, they developed smaller. They're about 14.2, I would say.
So when you say they're a workhorse, what do you mean? Like, what kind of work do they do with the horses?
Oh, they would haul sugarcane out and load them up with things. They're mostly pack horses, I would say.
Okay.
Their primary function.
Now, there's not so many fences either, is there? Did I hear that? That they're kind of just in the backyard and wandering around?
A lot of them are tied. There are fences. Some are kept in pasture, but a lot of people will tie them along the roadsides or in open areas with long ropes.
Hmm.
And they just eat in a circle.
And they manage not to kill themselves like our horses.
Yeah, anyway, how does that happen?
I know. I don't know. I think there's a possibility that some of them did kill themselves. Those are not the ones that made it.
Tie my pony up in 10 minutes, he'd be dead.
Yeah.
Natural
I tried
selection.
That with mine for half a second.
No, I mean, I've seen horses that just sort of seem to figure it out. I know that my horse spent a lot of his early life tied too long, and he doesn't get himself in trouble with ropes, but then other horses don't ever seem to catch on.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you guys tie your horses in on these rides, and it always amazes me that there isn't more trouble than there is just tying them the way you guys do. And, you know, I just am always amazed.
So we don't really have a lot of trouble with horses. I mean, every now and then somebody will get into trouble, but it's really more the exception than the rule. I mean, it's very rare.
You think it's because the horses are just tired being ridden all day? They're just like, okay, I'm done.
I don't know. What do you think, Susan?
Possibly. Definitely after the first day. But when we get there, they just learn to tie, I guess. I think also the ones that don't tie don't come back.
That could be. New well, career.
That could be.
One of Susan's
horses. The one-time deal.
This horse that she rode starting out, her horse Lou, he would sometimes pull back. But you put him on one of those tie blockers, didn't you?
I did all kinds of different things. And I tied him differently. I put a rope farther back on his, through the halter farther back on his neck so that pressure wouldn't hit the pole. It would hit farther back on the neck, and that helped a lot. I also used the, I don't know what it's called, but it will slide through if they pull back when you tie them. And
yeah.
I used boards. I used a lot of different things.
Well, and if I...
Work.
When he pulled back, when he pulled through the thing that he pulls back on, didn't he just go and stand with his friend when he got loose?
Oh, yeah. He never went anywhere. He just went to graze or stood around and looked at the wall. So he never... He just panicked, and then he was done.
So growing up in Costa Rica, were there a lot of horses, and did anybody compete there? Was there any competition of any kind?
Well, times have changed. When I rode there, it was about 30 years ago, and there was none of that. Now there is. They do a lot more trail rides during their local fairs. A lot of towns will have fairs, and they'll have a trail ride that goes with it and horse competitions. And they also have some endurance rides now. And so there is more competition and more organized events. And when I was growing up there, I don't know that there were any, and I didn't attend any, but I don't think there were.
Has the education, and I know you go back on a regular basis, right?
Yes.
Has the education gotten any better as far as horse care? Do you think as a whole, I mean, obviously there's always exceptions, but on a whole, has it gotten better?
I think so. But the horses are placed in different categories. There's the horses that work, and they need to be functional to work. And so their care is different, and they're not pets. And then there's the people that have them as recreational use. And so they are, I would believe, more educated and do more care. So I think it's divided.
Are there people still using carts and carriages at all?
Yes, they use carts. They'll pull a cart for also to just haul things back and forth for work. They don't use them for transportation, like a carriage for people that I've seen.
It's mostly just the pictures we've seen of the overflowing cart full of watermelons or whatever.
Bananas.
Bananas. There you go.
Bananas.
Is that the crop of Costa Rica?
That's the overflowing crop.
Now, bananas, I'm always amazed when I go to, we go to Disney and you go through the little, at Epcot, you go through the little thing there and you see all the plants growing. And I'm always amazed. I always pictured bananas growing on trees, but they don't.
It's a big plant.
It's a big,
big leafy plant.
Plant. And from what I understand, once they get a crop off of that, that particular part of the plant doesn't grow another crop.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So well, maybe they cut that section off. And
yeah, I just, it's a strange thing. And I was going, I just didn't picture it that way. So bananas are the crop and they still use horses for bringing the crop in. I guess it makes sense. If you don't have tractors, you got to use something.
Yeah. Yeah. But they have a lot of vehicles and trucks and it's industrialized. So just a few small farmers might use a horse, but everything else is. They have their trucks, and that's the most efficient way of getting them out. It's just occasionally you'll see a horse carting produce around. They also still use ox. But again, that's not the norm. That's just something you'll find way out in the backwoods.
What's the language?
I was in Nicaragua.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was in Nicaragua just over the border, and they did use horses a lot for work and for carriages in town. And for the tourists and for visitors, and they did use a lot more of the horses for work in town right there.
And for everybody wondering, Costa Rica is down near Panama and below Nicaragua. Just go Mexico and go south before you get before you get to Panama, which is the sort of skinny part.
Costa Rica's right below Nicaragua, south of Nicaragua and north of Panama.
So your family grew up there. How did you end up back here? United States.
To go to college. My dad is American and my mom is Costa Rican.
Okay.
And I was supposed to come here to go to school, and I did.
And then you stayed. Mm-hmm. So, and you also, you are very well traveled. I mean, I've always been jealous of Susan's summer travel habits because she goes back home to Costa Rica for part of the summer. Just recently, she got to go to Bulgaria for a riding trip. And I would love to hear some more about your riding trip because I've seen all the pictures on Facebook and it's just gorgeous.
It was a beautiful trip.
How did that happen?
A friend called me up about 8 months ago and asked me if I wanted to go with a group of ladies trail riding. And I said yes. And that was the extent of my research and involvement picking the place. So I just went because they invited me, and I had never been. And the ladies I went with, talk about well-traveled, they have done many equestrian tours all over the world, in Kenya, France, and Spain, India. They've been everywhere. This was my first as an organized, toured group ride, and it was beautiful. It was a wonderful experience. Bulgaria has a lot to offer. If you ever get the chance, you should go.
You know, the horses were kind of small, I noticed, in the photos. I mean, how big were they really? Were they really that small, or was it,
They were pretty small. They were 14 hands. Very, very easy to get on. We were all very pleased with that. And they were sturdy little horses. They're their national breed. It's called a Caracachan. And it also is a mix of breeds. It's their workhorse. And they were falling out of favor for other breeds. And so now they encourage people to buy them and use them. And the government will even give them a stipend to use their national breed.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. They were hardy, sturdy. They knew what they were doing. Yeah, felt safe all the time. You could let go of the reins and take as many pictures as you wanted.
They weren't prone to taking off on their own.
No, they know what they're doing, and they were very sturdy, steady.
So did you guys stay at a central location and ride different directions each day, or did you ride from place to place, or how did that work?
No, it's called a progressive ride, so we would ride to a different village every day and stay in that village, and the guide and the company have worked out where you stay, and everything was great, and the food was amazing. And
so it's sort of like a pub crawl through Bulgaria.
I don't know what.
There was no alcohol, I'm sure, in the whole trip.
There was alcohol. They would give us their local brandy or their old whatever they called it, and it would burn a hole through you. So that was a sip kind of thing.
There's a couple of vendors, and we've had them on the driving show, who do the carriage drives through Bulgaria too, up into the mountains.
Oh,
and
wow.
And that's what they do. They do the same thing. It's progressive, and you're on. It's a coach actually, and you'll be on the coach or in the coach, and you go from town to town, and they do a certain number of miles each day, and it just, you know, for people who don't want to ride that whole distance, it just looks like fun. Now, when you were riding, what kind of terrain were you in?
It was rough. I mean, I'd be surprised to see a coach go through there. Most of the roads we travel were logging roads.
Okay.
So if we weren't on an actual trail through the forest, we were on logging roads. But it had been raining, so the ruts were significant. And then there was a lot of downfall. And the guide told us that in March, they had such a heavy snowfall that it... And the trees were starting to grow their new pines and leaves and stuff, so it broke a lot of trees and knocked them down. So there were sections that we had to go around them or under them and move some sections. So that would have been really hard with a carriage.
Yeah, I think they stuck mainly to the roads. Paved
they
roads.
Must have, yes. yeah, paved roads.
But how many miles did you guys ride each day? I mean, what was the pace like? And...
Well, since I was in Bulgaria, it's going to be in kilometers. Because
How many kilometers?
The first
did you ride
day we rode, it was 33 kilometers the first day. And I think that was the longest in kilometers. And then we rode 30, 20, 25. But it was an all day thing. We would start out at 9:30, and except for the short 18 day, we would be out until 5:30 or 6.
Oh, so you were putting in some serious time in the saddle then.
It was a long time in the saddle, yeah. And we did walk and gallop, those were our two paces. There was no trotting. But we moved out wherever we could, and the rest of the time we walked. But there was a lot. We'd stop for lunch and stop for pictures, and we would get off and go tour something else that we had to hike to, and that kind of thing. So it was leisurely, very leisurely.
That sounds wonderful.
Did you have people, were these all people who had ridden before, you know, that were experienced riders, or did you have people that were just new at this?
No, they were all experienced. Yeah. Like I said, I was the newest to this kind of tour, and they had all done many miles.
Is that one of the requirements? They require that on this one?
No, it's not a requirement. I would strongly suggest that you get in riding shape before you go, because that's a long time to be in the saddle.
Yeah.
But it's not a requirement for them.
Was the saddle comfortable?
I'm sorry?
Was your saddle comfortable?
Yes, it was. They had very good saddles. They were Western saddles. And we all enjoyed our saddles. None of us ride in a Western saddle per se, but they were all comfortable. Nobody had any rubs. The horses were sound at the end of 6 days. So they were good saddles.
That sounds so amazing.
They were German. Yeah, they were made by, there's a couple of German saddles, and the rest were made in Bulgaria.
Wow. Well, something I wondered about, and I'm wondering, you know, before you left, you had had some back trouble over the last couple of years. Did your back give you any trouble while you were riding, or did it go really well for you?
It went really well, better than I anticipated, thank goodness. But part of the problem I had was a pinched nerve. And it wasn't shooting pain. It was numbness and tingling and cramping in my right leg. And my first day I had a bit of trouble because I had to use a lot of leg, and those horses are pretty dead on the sides. So that was really difficult. My hamstring was starting to cramp and I was worried. I thought, oh no, I've got to do this for 5 days. But I got a whip. And after I got the whip, I didn't use my leg anymore and we were good to go.
So tell me a little bit about how you injured your back and the steps to recovery that enabled you to be able to do this ride.
Okay, so about 5 years ago, I ruptured the disc, and I did my physical therapy and started riding about 3 months afterwards, and it was going well, but something happened, and the disc must have shifted or something, and I had a pinched nerve, And it wasn't shooting pain. It was all that numbness and tingling and weakness in my right leg. And that just didn't allow me to do very much. But riding never hurt. It's exertion, overexerting myself is what would cause me problems. So I could only ride short distances or stay in the saddle no more than 2 hours, 3 hours on a trail ride. And after I had surgery in October of last year. And I've just since then, I've just followed the program and did a lot of physical therapy and tried to strengthen my core. And I tried to get in trail miles to get conditioned, but since it started raining and we had ice and rain and all kinds of things here in Texas, so I wasn't able to put in the miles I wanted. So it was based on that, on the surgery and physical therapy and a little bit of a leave.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy that it has turned out so well for you, because I know for a while you were concerned about pushing the envelope and you didn't really want to know that you couldn't do the distance anymore.
That's right. That's right. I knew I couldn't. I just didn't know how far I could go. So that's very limiting when you decide you want to go for a weekend ride and camp and do all of that. And you think, well, I don't know if I can do it. So it's been good. And I've modified my riding. I don't sit the canter. I two-point it. And because that rolling motion might just be too much. And I like posting strengthens and keeps the core tight too, so that works.
Well, and you know, a lot of people I know suggested to you that maybe you should get a gated horse, but you had some thoughts about that.
I need the two-point. I need to get out of the saddle. I need to not sit all the time, because sitting, it makes me sore. And a lot of times I've noticed that with the gated horses, if they're not smooth and you sit the whole time, I think it would just move me differently and not allow me to use the muscles that I need to use that I get with posting. And you could, I assume with a gated horse, I would post or two-point the canter also. But I don't know what, if you're just moving out at a faster pace, I don't know what I could do to get out of the saddle for that.
That makes sense.
Gated horses. But yeah, that sometimes, and they move real big, and sometimes that's just too much movement. They're a big walk.
So do you have any tips for other riders that may be facing, you know, and I know yours was in your lower back, but I mean, like facing disc problems, or do you have any advice that other riders could heed?
Strengthen your core. Do your physical therapy. Don't sit around. That's what I advise. And see a physical therapist and do what they say. Well, make sure you see a good one. But I strongly encourage people to strengthen their core. And if you've never had any back problems, but your legs are tingling every now and then, that's pressure on a nerve. And don't ignore it. So and start strengthening. All those exercises we don't want to do, those are the ones you need to go do. Pilates.
I'm thinking that with our cores, I mean, we all need better core strength if we're going to be riding.
Yes.
So our horses will thank us.
Like dressage. Nobody wants to do it.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
That's why I drive. I don't have to worry about that. Just
I was going to say, I thought about that. Like, you don't have to strengthen your core because you're a driver.
I'm sure you do. Somebody will tell you do need to have a strong core
yes.
to drive.
That's true.
Keep your balance in the
Somebody
car.
Somebody told you that.
That's true.
When you take a corner, you got to stay upright.
Well, that's fascinating to hear about your trip, and so you recommend Bulgaria.
I do recommend Bulgaria. Plovdiv is the town that we stayed in, the city, and it's wonderful. The people are great. The food is excellent.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about the food. I'm always interested in the food. So what are you getting?
What do we get? There's a lot of veal, lamb, which I did not. I don't like those, but I ate a lot of chicken and a lot of goat cheese. But the sauces are just wonderful with their chicken. I had a chicken and fig sauce, and it was amazing, and a clay pot with chicken stew and even a bean stew was just wonderful. They season things very well. They always start you off with a salad, tomato, cucumbers, and goat cheese. And the desserts were, it was just wonderful. And the prices are very good. You can eat a full meal for $6.
Oh, wow.
A dinner. Yeah, a dinner. And the souvenirs shops are very well priced also. So it's very affordable once you get there.
It's very Did you have to ship home a lot of souvenirs?
No, not a lot. Some. I brought my some bowls. Their pottery is really pretty. Oh. They have textiles.
Yes.
They're just gorgeous. They do a lot of goat wool. Since they have all the sheep and goats, they do a lot of wool products, and their textiles are beautiful. And yep. Wherever we went, we would go buy something, and it was made by the person working the shop. So they were actually doing the wool work.
How about English? Did enough understand it that you could get by, or was it tough?
Yes. Enough in the town of Plovdiv understood it so that we could interact with them. But it not very many, and they always apologized for not having good English, which was ridiculous because our Bulgarian was non-existent.
Yeah, exactly.
So we were always happy, yeah.
You didn't
take a
crash course?
We were happy when they spoke some.
Could you?
I tried looking it up online and stuff, and it was awful.
Well, their language,
the lettering doesn't make sense.
Yeah, their alphabet's different too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So it was very difficult. They're very Eastern European, and it was difficult. So thankfully they did. And there are a lot of tourists in Plovdiv, but they are not American, which is interesting.
What are they?
Just everywhere. You'd see a lot of other Europeans out in the mountains when we were staying in the little villages. We ran into some Germans out hiking, and it was raining, and our guides had built a fire, and they joined us for lunch because it was raining and cold, and they were from Germany, and one was from Bulgaria. And then at one village, we met 8 Belgian hikers. And we did see a lot of hikers over the mountains, and they follow the route. It's well marked with paint, you know, to follow the white paint marks or the green, and then it would separate. And so we did see a fair amount of hikers. We also saw gypsies working up there, and they were hauling out logs with horses. And then the trucks would pick them up with their cranes. But the gypsies or horses would pull the logs out of the forest.
Wow.
But, yeah. And our guide spoke good English, so he would translate for us in the places where they didn't speak it.
So with the menus, when you ordered off a menu, did they have an English translation, or did you just have to?
Yes, it did.
That's good.
It did. And that kind of, that kind of standardized everything English, because I asked the guide, he had a group of Germans and a group of Japanese come through, and I said, well, what do you speak? And he said, English. So that's the common denominator when people outside of Bulgaria come that don't speak Bulgarian, even if they don't speak, you know, they're Germans, but they also speak English. So that was the language that's used.
Well, that's very cool. Thank you so much for stopping by and talking. I love hearing about this stuff and different places that people ride, because, you know, Bulgaria is not the first place on your list when you go, okay, I want to go ride someplace. So
exactly.
Costa Rica either, for that matter, and you've done both, and that's really, really cool. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Susan?
Sure thing. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Susan.
All right. Take care.
You're welcome. Bye.
You know, I think I want to go riding in Bulgaria more than Costa Rica at this point.
I've heard stories from Susan over the years of the Costa Rica riding, too. And one year she and some friends went up into the mountains, and it just, except the camping part wasn't fun because they like camped on a concrete slab. That didn't sound comfortable. But it was, well, they had to like split all their stuff because it was truly like you pack it, you know, whatever you had is what you packed in on your horses. And so they had to divide all their things up between the 3 or 4 of them. But I don't know. Costa Rica sounds pretty too. And she always goes to the beach when she's there. I don't know if she rides on the beach, but she always spends part of her summer vacation at the beach. And some year I'm going to go down there when she's there and be like, surprise.
Well, you know what? That's a perfect transition to our next guest, because all I keep seeing is pictures of her overlooking the ocean when she's out and about. So you want to introduce our next guest?
Sure. Our next guest is Bree Rosario from Riding Warehouse. And Riding Warehouse is one of our national NATRC sponsors. And I welcome you today, Bree.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Bree. It's been a while.
I know. How are you, Glenn?
Good. How are things out there in California?
Oh, you know, they're dry and warm and
dry, but warm?
We're doing all right. But
what is dry?
We're doing good out here. Hey, what is wet?
Well, yeah, there you go. We'll ship some of our water there.
Yes, we could desperately use it. That's for sure. So, but it's been a good busy. We're not even into the summer yet, but it feels like it, and it's been busy. We've been riding a ton, and it's been great.
I got to tell you, Alice, that you know every horse girl that's growing up that wants to marry the hunkiest cowboy ever. That's who Bree found.
Yes, I'm pretty lucky.
And he happens to have this big farm, so they get to go riding all the time. And there's all these pictures of them with beautiful scenery. He just looks like he has one of those good families, too. So you have to still be a happy camper out there.
Yes, I'm very happy. Yeah, I get married in about 6 weeks now. So
is it?
So really excited. Yeah, we're down to 6 weeks. So it's been fun and busy.
Are you getting married on horseback?
I'm not.
No. Good move.
I know enough about horses. Yeah, I know enough about horses to know not to do that.
So. You've seen enough of YouTube videos that went bad.
Yes. Done that, seen that, and not going to go down that path. But very cute idea for those that don't mind last minute issues, but I've seen enough issues in person and on YouTube. So I learned.
And you know what you find a lot of times is it's the semi horse girls. It's not true horse girls. It's girls that know a little bit about horses that want to get married and ride a horse. The true horse girls go, no way. I'm not breaking an arm on my wedding day.
No, yeah, they think it's going to be really romantic, and but you're right. The true horse girls know better than that. So.
That's right.
Not doing it. but we are going to Costa Rica for our honeymoon.
Oh, are you really?
Oh, wow.
We just talked about that.
I am, yeah. Yeah, so I was hearing you guys talk about that and thought, oh, well, we'll have to maybe try riding out there. So, we're going to do that and staying right along the beach. But we're lucky enough here we get to ride on the beach. I hate to tell everybody that, but we do. We get to ride on the beach here at home. So, I live in paradise every day, really. I have to be thankful.
Tell everybody a little bit about about your boyfriend's ranch and the operation there, what it's like. Because a lot of people have never lived that kind of life.
Right. Well, a lot of people don't think that kind of life even exists in California, especially on the coast. We live here on the Central Coast, on California. And my fiance's family raises Red Angus cattle, beef cattle. They have a small family-run operation and have two little ranches. They live on one and then have another one about half an hour north. And the cattle have ocean views and out on the grass there. So they're pretty spoiled. Perfect weather. It never gets above probably 80, 85 degrees here. And that's a really hot day. So, it never gets cold. And, the only bad thing is it never rains. So we're feeding a lot of hay right now, but other than that, it's beautiful. And, he team ropes too on the side. So it's a fun lifestyle for sure.
Now, did you ride? Did you compete? Were you doing barrels or anything?
As a kid, I did a little bit. My sister, went and did college rodeo and she did barrels and poles and goat tying and breakaway roping. I did a little bit of that for fun, like Gymkhana level, but I got into training horses when I was in high school and fell in love with 2 and 3 year olds. And so I've been actually kind of doing that end of it. I've been trying to get paid to ride rather than paying to ride. So so kind of just followed that path instead. But I just love the babies. I love working with them. So that's kind of the avenue that I went. So like cheering them on. I'm a competitive person, but I've found it's pretty expensive out here to do that, especially with working. It's hard to find the time. So I enjoy training a little bit more. It's fun.
That sounds fun. So, so you grew up riding and then you have a career training horses and you also are a buyer for Riding Warehouse. I mean, how do you juggle all of that?
I'm really busy. it's a little bit easier in the spring summer months because of the longer days. It gets a little bit trickier when it gets into winter just because of the daylight, not so much because of the weather out here, but more so the daylight. But it meshes really well. I don't do any sort of advertising for the training stuff. It's all kind of word of mouth, and so I try to kind of ramp it up in the warmer longer days type of months and then kind of slow it down in the winter time because I just don't have enough time. But it's definitely a juggling act. I really like being busy and I just love the horses. So for me, if you love the horses that much, we all figure out a way to fit it into our busy lifestyle if it's something that's important to us. And I'm lucky enough that, my full-time, 8-hour job kind of fits into the lifestyle a little bit as well. So it's really fun because I get to try out products myself. And so it all kind of, it seems to mesh together, but it's a very busy lifestyle. But for us horse girls, we'll find a way to fit it in.
So
I'm very lucky that I found that.
So did you always know that you wanted to work in horses, or did you think that, did you, when you first started thinking career, was it always that it was going to be a horse career of some type?
I actually never thought it was going to be a horse career. When I was a little girl, I really wanted to be a horse trainer. And then I kind of looked into it and realized that, that's a tough lifestyle for your full-time gig. It's tough to keep the clients coming in. So I learned that pretty early on and thought, I'll just do it on the side, which I ended up doing. But I did not think that being in the horse industry was a possibility at all for a full-time career. And I kind of just fell into it. I hate to say that, but I did fall into it. I got my degree in agricultural business. So I'm really into agriculture, horses, cattle, land, ranching, farming, love all aspects of that. So I kind of was going more the agriculture route. I worked for the USDA and thought that was going to be the way to go. And I loved it, loved the USDA and I loved my experience there. And, this kind of just, by being in the horse world throughout college, I worked at a boarding facility and was training and kind of just met horse people here on the Central Coast and kind of just fell into this really accidentally. So, for those of you who don't know if it can, become something, it can, even when you least expect it. It wasn't something I was searching for, but I'm really, really lucky and happy that it worked out. So, but yeah, I never thought it was a possibility.
Now, you're a buyer for Riding Warehouse, right?
Yeah, I'm a buyer, so I get to see the latest and greatest. And
so how
I'm
do you
first one to touch the product?
So let's go a little inside baseball. How and we used to have a tack business, as you know. So I've lived this what you're living, and so how do you know? I mean, you're buying something in, not knowing whether it's going to sell or not. Yes, you have an inclination. You know what your customers like and don't like. But there's kind of a science to that. Do you go on gut? How do you decide what to buy and what you think is going to be the next hottest thing?
It's totally shooting in the dark. And for us in the beginning, because we've only been operating as Riding Warehouse for a few years now, and so in the very beginning it was really hard because we didn't know our customer base as well as we do now, and we're continuing to learn. But like you said, knowing your customer base is huge. I kind of haven't, I've got an idea of what our customers like, what price point our customers like, what type of product. But really, so it's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of gut. It's a little bit of trying things. If something's brand new in the industry, it's really a shot in the dark. So what I'm looking for there is to make sure, is it quality? Is it at a price that makes sense? Is there a need for it? Are customers going to look at it and go, I have to have that? And if the answer is yes to those things, then I'll take a gamble and try it. And then just kind of monitor it and see. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it's something that's been in the industry for a while and something I want to bring into our business, then I kind of have a little bit of a better idea.
Yeah, that's a little bit easier.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier because I know if other people are still carrying it, then it must be doing okay. But for the brand new things, really I'm looking at to make sure it's you know, make sense for the customers that are coming to our site. It makes sense price-wise, and it makes sense quality-wise. That's the thing, is a lot of stuff comes out that isn't quality, and that's something we don't, even if it's something latest and greatest, if it's not quality and we're going to get, you know, if we're going to get unhappy customers because of that, I don't even want to, you know, take a gamble on it. So that's kind of number one in my mind. And, you know, but a lot of it is shooting in the dark.
A lot of inventors who invent products, they forget about the most important thing that you learn when you're a buyer. And that is, every product has a price point, that if you go over that price point, every particular product has a price point. So if you've got, if you got a bit, you know that that bit is going to sell for that particular bit. My people are going to pay up to $49 for it, but they're not going to pay a penny over. And, you know, right. when you have a bit that's over that, even if somebody thinks it's the best thing in the world, but I'm going to charge $150, boy, you better have a brand name behind it or you're not going to sell that bit. Everybody, when you go out to buy something, if you think about yourself, when you go out to buy something, you have a price in mind. Like, if I go to buy steaks, I'm not going to pay over a certain price. I'm going to go, well, that's too expensive. And right. that's just uh-huh. what I have in my mind for that particular product, right? But everybody has right. that for everything they buy.
Oh, that's definitely. True.
Yeah, and, definitely. And it's learning that particular thing. And, you know, everybody's is a little different, but if you average them out, there is an average to what people are going to pay for a 4-pack of toilet paper, you know? So, but it's true, right? I mean, we all kind of have this price in our mind. Yes, we have to adjust it over time. And yes, there are premium brands like Apple who kind of shoot that in the foot. And but there's still a lot of people who won't buy an Apple computer because they're 4 times what a PC is. So they're just never going to buy that. And it's the same in the riding world, isn't it?
It definitely is the same. And it does depend a little bit on the customer base. So you do, like I said, you do have to know that. But you're totally right. However, you know, there's some brands out there in the riding world that get away with a higher price point because of the name and because they're doing something completely unique that nobody else, usually they're patented at that point. So nobody can come in and do anything like that. But I totally agree. There is, in general, there is a lot to be said about the price that people set products at. Now, I will say that horse people are very price conscious in general. And regardless of what spectrum they're on, they have it in their brain. Like you said, they've got that in their mind, what they are comfortable spending. And there's a range within customers, but in general, horse people very much know what they want to spend. And they may splurge if it's, like you said, a name thing, but they're pretty picky, and they're not going to spend astronomical amounts, especially on a horse. Horses are tough on product. So it's definitely got to be, if it's, you know, a replaceable type of product, it can't be $250 if they know that they're going to have to replace it. And, you know, if it's something that's going to last forever, then yeah, they're definitely going to spend that because it's worth it.
Can I request, please, fly mask that my pony won't destroy?
I need to fly mask that can't come off.
I need to start ordering them by the case because... He just, you know, it's the little black thing or little edge that they sew on that just gets ripped off. And then he starts to look like a homeless pony because there's things hanging everywhere. And then eventually I just have to buy him another one. And I go through like 5 a summer because he's so hard on his fly masks.
So it's like, well, for that, we need to invent a way to completely remove flies from your barn.
Yeah.
That's the plan, right?
Okay. Yeah. Let me know when you have that. Okay, Bree.
Yeah, that'll be an easier solution probably for you. But yeah, ponies are the worst. Ponies are the most destructive, I think. They're hard ponies on tack.
So what are some of the newest, latest, and greatest things for endurance riders or distance riders? I was looking at the website, and I saw this Zilco Bling. It looked pretty exciting.
Yes, so Zilco is one of our top brands for endurance, trail riding, distance riders. People who know Zilco know it lasts forever. It's extremely durable, but I think the best part about it is it's the most easy to clean product
Yay.
Out there.
By the way, us carriage drivers use it too. Zilco harness here, and I love mine.
Yeah. Zilco is fantastic material. It's synthetic to clean, because if you're distance riding, carriage driving, whatever, you're getting your horse really foamy, sweaty, and to be able to literally dunk it in a bucket of soap and water and you're done, and you don't have to do anything. It's not like leather, you know. So Zilco is awesome, and they're always coming out with new things to make the endurance and distance riders stand out and express their personality a little bit. They come in tons of colors in general, but they just came out with the Zilco Bling. So for those riders that like a little bit of sparkle, which, you know, a lot of them do, we've got that now out. It's a breastplate and also a halter bridle. And again, the distance and NATRAC type of riders like to have the halter bridle in case they have to get off and tie for whatever reason, or they're trail riding and want to have a lunch. So it's a great product. And yeah, so Bling right now just comes in the black for now, but we're hoping that if it's really popular, it'll start to come in the colors, you know, down the line. So we'll see how the Bling goes, but it's brand new. So we're really excited about that one because our customers just love Zilco.
It looks really cool. I was looking at the Zilco Hackamore because I use an S-Hack on my horse, and uh-huh. he actually likes the little rawhide piece. I mean, I've tried softer ones and he didn't like it, but I would love to get him into something softer. And I was looking at that Hackamore, and that looks pretty cool because it looks like you can adjust the amount of flexion, or, you know, amount of pressure on their nose and their pole.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a really popular piece. Hackamores in general, I find, are becoming more and more and more popular. People are moving a little bit out of bits for now for the distance riding, I would say. Definitely tons of people using bits, but we do sell a lot of Hackamores. So, and, you know, from my end, it seems that people are loving that. So the S Hackamore is a really popular one. The Zilco Flower Hackamore, never seen anything like it. I love that Hackamore because you can kind of change it up depending on how much leverage you need. And it's just a cool looking, it looks like almost a piece of art on your horse. So I love the Flower Hackamore. So if you love Zilco, check that out. It's a great product.
So is there anything else that's a hot seller right now besides fly masks, which I'm sure always.
Fly masks are always a very hot seller for us. We have hoof boots. Oh, tons and tons of people getting into the hoof boots, especially now with riding season is definitely well underway. We sell tons of hoof boots. The Easy Boots are most popular from Easy Care. However, we've got a couple new boots from Easy Care coming out, so you'll have to stay tuned. So they're coming out in the next month. We've got a new Easy Boot Trail for the trail riders. It's actually geared for the 25 miles and under per ride, so not for the, you know, very long endurance rider, but for the shorter rides, the perfect boot, and we've got a new one coming out.
Is it different than the current?
That'll be a really fun thing.
Is it different than the current Easy Boot?
It is. It's a little bit different, and they're going to keep the trail around for a little while, the regular trail, and the new one is going to be called the New Trail. So the only difference is going to have the word new in it. And so you can see it out there, but it's not on the market yet, and we actually should be getting it this week, later this week, I think tomorrow. So they said by the end of the week, so it should be on the site by next week. So if you're into hoof boots and want to know the latest and greatest, you'll want to check that out for sure. Easy Boots are always a really popular product for us from Easy Care. So the glove is, like I said, the glove is our most popular, but Easy Care is always coming out with something great, and we always seem to sell it really well. So
I just got my horse into the Backcountry boots. The gloves didn't quite, they're not exactly right for his feet. And he always wore an Epic, but they don't quite fit right. His feet have changed, but that Backcountry boot has been fantastic.
That's perfect. You know, I've heard that people, if one doesn't work, another will work. You know, they have, you kind of have to experiment a little bit with the boots, especially if you're just transitioning into barefoot and using them. It takes a little bit of time, but I can't tell you how many customers just swear by the results. I mean, it's unbelievable. So many horses that couldn't go barefoot before now can, and just saves their hooves, and that there's some great ones out there. It's come a long way, I feel, you know, from back when I was a kid and hoof boots were, they were basically a temporary solution to like a lost shoe. And now it's just, it's crazy, the technology. So
yeah, we use,
so definitely they're always coming up.
We've experimented with a couple things with my pony because we drive them on the road, and we settled on the Cavallos, which really stay on nice. They don't twist, but But you know, you're right about the way they fit, because it, you know, the same boots I use on my horse may not be the perfect fit for your horse, just because the way the hoof is shaped. Mm-hmm. And then it also depends on where they are in their clipping cycle. We have to sometimes do our own self-clipping if they're coming up on getting their feet done. If the farrier's due out, and you know, they might be a tiny bit long for the boots, you have to do some adjusting to make sure that they fit. But yeah, so I think you're right. It does depend.
When yeah, I see, it really does. Yeah, we have. Go ahead. Yeah, the Cavallos are. I feel like they're getting more popular lately, and I've got a lot of people that are riding in those as well. The Trek seems to be the one that's taking off lately.
Yes, that's the one we use.
Just gone. Oh, okay. Yeah, that one has just gone over really well with the market. So, yeah, Cavallo definitely can find. We have such a large selection of hoof boots, since it's a really big part of our business. So you're sure to find something. And then the Easy Shoes, I don't know if you've seen those, by Easy Care came out last year. And those are becoming really popular. So there's something for literally everyone when it comes to hoof boots, if you're looking for a solution other than metal shoes.
Well, you know what? We're going to be heading out your way, my wife and I. We're going to be going out in October, hopefully here, if we can get it all arranged, to Solvang, to Monty Roberts Farm. And I know that's not too far from San Luis Obispo, is it?
It's really not. It's probably maybe an hour and just over an hour, like an hour 15 minutes, maybe. It's beautiful down there. You're going to have a great time.
Yeah. And I know what Santa Maria is in the middle there, right? Isn't that? Santa Maria is between the two?
It is, yes. Okay. And we're probably about, I would say, you know, 35, 40 minutes from Santa Maria. So if you keep going through there, you can come visit us.
All right, cool. Well, very good. Well, thank you, Bree. We appreciate you joining us. What's the website?
The website is www.ridingwarehouse.com. And one thing I do want to mention for your listeners, we've set up a discount code for them. It's good for $10 off an order of $30 or more, and it runs all the way through the very end of August. So it'll run through August 31st, and the code is going to be RADIO10. So if they use that code, they can either call in or they can do it online. Type in the promotional code RADIO10 and you'll get $10 off an order of $30 or more through the end of August. So encourage your customer or your listeners to use that and become a Riding Warehouse customer. Free shipping and free return shipping on orders over $50.
And that is one of the things that I really liked about you guys too. And that's a pretty good deal, $10 off 30. It's usually $10 off 50.
Yeah.
So that's a good deal.
It is a good deal.
Oh no. Yeah. Yep. $10 off 30. And then if you get to the 50, you get free shipping in the contiguous US. And then, all orders have return free shipping. So, even if you just, you know, get a $10 order, if you want to return it, we send you with a free return shipping label with every order. So you don't need any minimum to get that free return and exchange shipping.
Got it. And of course, they have English, Western, and Endurance, all three. So,
all three.
You can find them at ridingwarehouse.com. It's good to talk to you again, Bree.
Yeah, thanks for coming, Glenn.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
I can't wait to see pictures on Facebook.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Take care, Bree.
Bye.
Well, two lovely guests today.
Yes, they were. They were both very interesting.
Bree had joined us for a while. They were sponsors on the for a long while. They were sponsors on the Stable Scoop radio show, and she would join us with product recommendations and stuff. And we would always end up not talking about product and just talking about other stuff. So that's how I know so much about Bree. She has a neat place out there, and I love how she said a couple small ranches. I don't think they're small in our terms, by the way.
Well, small is probably relative.
Yeah, small in Texas terms, not small in East Coast terms.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Cool place. Cool place to ride, too, California. Well, thank you so much for putting this all together. Where can people find out more about the NATRC?
They can find NATRC at www.natrc.org.
And usually this is the point where we do the ride calendar and what's coming up, but there's just too much, right?
No, not really.
Oh, really?
Okay. No, because they kind of take off in the summer. And the next, well, we were supposed to have a ride this weekend, and that's clearly not happening for the John Zink Indian Territory ride. But there are two rides this weekend. There's one in Region 3, which is Colorado. And that's the Highlands Ranch Backcountry ride. And there's a ride in Region 5 in Virginia this weekend. It's the Virginia Highlands at Ivanhoe, Virginia. And then there's kind of a break until July when there's a ride in Alaska, which we talked to Laurie last month about Alaska. So
terrific. All right. Very good. NATRC.org. Well, you take care of yourself, Alice, and we'll talk to you again next week. If you want to hear Alice's past episodes, just go to horsesinthemorning.com and just search for NATRC. It'll bring up all the past episodes. You can take a listen to them. We've had some very fun guests on along the way. And of course, talking all about trail riding every month. Alice is on with us. It is always the third Thursday of every month. So you can also take a look that way on the website. And the easiest way to listen to our show on the recorded version, if you can't catch it live, is just join us later in the day on our app. Just go to the iOS or Android app store and search for Horse Radio Network. Horses in the Morning is one of 8 different shows on the app. Thank you very much, Alice.
Thank you, Glenn.
Take care.
And Jen. Take care.